Probably the most popular snack food, or certainly one of the most popular snack foods we have in the United States, is the potato chip. We're going to be talking about the potato chip today with Dirk Berhans of Columbia, Missouri. He's the author of Crunch, A History of the Great American Potato Chip. It's published by Terrace Books, the University of Wisconsin Press, and we're really pleased to have him with us today by phone to talk about the potato chip. And maybe you've got a favorite chip that you like, or maybe you had a favorite chip that's no longer out there. We'd love to hear your questions or comments at 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us at talk@wpr.org. Dirk Berhans, welcome. Thanks for taking time to be with us today. Appreciate it very much.
Well, thank you very much, Larry. Glad to be here.
I was in Florida for a few days, and, you know, I read your book, and so every new bag of potato chip, I had to take a look at it and see, read. I spent more time looking at potato chip bags, I think, than I ever have in my life.
You know, I hear that from people that they can never look at potato chips the same way after reading my book.
It's a fascinating book. How did you why has no one written a book about the potato chip? Yours is the first, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, mine's the first trade book that is popular book on potato chips. There's some industry type books, it was amazing to me. There's books on Coca-Cola and candy and donuts and hamburgers and beer, and yet potato chips, as you said at your intro, during your intro, are America's most popular salty snack, and nobody had written a book about it. So I thought, well, it's about time. And
so you're a potato. Is that how you got interested in the book? You're a potato chip aficionado, or?
Well, you know, I love potato chips, but I actually at the time, and this is going back to the late 1990s, I was writing a newsletter published out of my own basement called Greasy Spoon about hamburger restaurants and drive-in restaurants and things like that, and I started a little column on the back called Chip of the Month, and I was making visits back to Ohio and finding all these little funny, strange little oddball family-owned chip companies, and I had this Chip of the Month column, and I just... One thing led to another. What can I say?
Oh,
I thought,
man,
maybe there was a book here, and I found some interest from several publishers and ended up with University of Wisconsin Press, and they've been great to work with.
Yeah, that's great. Well, maybe you can tell us how the potato chip – well, I guess there are several stories about the origin of the potato chip, but maybe you can fill us in.
Sure. The story that you're going to hear 99% of the time, the story that you're going to hear in the trivia books and on the History Channel and so forth, is that in Saratoga Springs, New York, a very wealthy community, especially in the 1800s when people from New York City would escape there in the summer because there was no air conditioning back then, they'd go up to Saratoga Springs. A restaurant called Moon's Lake House, there was a chef named George Crum, who was supposed to be a very irascible, difficult chef, and a patron said his fried potatoes were not thin enough, and Crum essentially said, "I'll fix this guy," and sliced them real thin, threw the potato slices in oil, and returned them to the patron, expecting the guy to, you know, react in a bad way. And the patron actually loved the chips. And like I say, this is a story you're going to hear most of the time.
But it's not necessarily true.
That is correct. The story that apparently has a little more validity is that Crumb's sister, who is named Katie Wicks, was slicing potatoes, basically peeling potatoes, next to a donut, essentially a donut fryer. And some of the thin sliced potatoes got into the donut fryer. They fished them out, and they said, "Hey, these are great." And they started serving them at Moon's Lake House restaurant. And they caught on from there and spread outward from there. And that seems to be the more likely story, because she was credited in her obituary with the invention of the potato chip. Crum, who was apparently a braggart and a very boastful person, never took credit for potato chips.
And if he had invented the potato chip, we would have heard about it.
That's what they say. Yeah.
well, that's the story. And the start of the potato chip in terms of its being distributed outside of Saratoga Springs, I think is kind of an interesting one, too.
Yes, it is. You know, and unfortunately, we don't know a whole lot about it. And it's hard for us to think now we've got the internet, we've got TV, we've got radio, newspapers. And back then, we really, you know, we had newspapers, but we didn't really have the kind of network community that we have now. And we don't really know too much about it, but we know that they radiated outward from Saratoga Springs into New England, upstate New York. And then pretty much as they radiated outward, every small town, every large town or every small city had its own kind of literally a garage or woodshed type potato chip business. I come from a small town in southeast Ohio of 20,000 people, and I was surprised to find that there were two potato chip companies in my little town that I'd never heard of. So, you know, it was literally a cottage industry until it started to grow and the small companies gained wider distribution, wanting to gain market share, as good business people want to do.
And, of course, the two-ton gorilla in all this is Lay's right now, but it started out as a smaller operation, too.
Yeah, that's right. Herman Lay, who started the Lay Company, started out as a distributor for a company in the South called Barrett's. And he was an aggressive businessman, and he eventually ended up with the company, and he bought out other smaller companies, and he built plants throughout the South and eventually grew Lay's to become a large company, and then they merged with the Frito Company in 1961 to become Frito-Lay. And at that time, it's kind of hard to believe now, but at that time, there was no one potato chip brand distributed in all 50 states, and Lay's potato chips in 1961 were the first potato chip brand to be available in all 50 states.
Well, in Madison, I was raised in Madison, and it was the Red Dot Potato Chip Company.
Red Dot, uh-huh. Do you personally remember Red Dot?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
All right.
He had a clown, if I'm not mistaken, on the bag itself.
Right. Tato the Clown, yeah. Red Dot was an interesting company. They were a very large regional company. They were distributed in 12 states, and they had 8 plants, and that's a pretty hefty regional company. And after growing about as big as they thought they could, the owner sold out to Frito-Lay in, I want to say, 1961, something like
somewhere
that.
In there,
yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I was a kid, but I still remember those bags. And we should talk a little about bags. Well, let's talk about the potatoes first. The potatoes that the chipping potatoes are different from the potatoes that we use in baking and salads and so forth, aren't they?
Yeah, that's right. They're a little different. They're bred specifically to have high dry matter content. They call it, in the industry, they call it high specific gravity. And that's just because, you know how you always hear about the human body is, I don't know what it is, 98% water or something. It's the same thing with potatoes. You think about you're peeling potatoes and you're throwing them into boiling hot oil. The first thing that's going to happen is all that water is going to boil off. So you want a potato that has high dry matter content. So chipping potatoes are a little different than the table, what they call in the industry, the table stock that we use for potato salad. And so there are specially bred varieties like Norchip and Atlantic and Snowden. Snowden is a, as you might gather from the name, is a storage variety that can be stored during the winter, and these are bred for the potato chip industry.
And the bagging I think is quite interesting as well, because originally the chips were sold out of, weren't they sold out of barrels, if I'm not mistaken, Reed?
Yeah, they're, you know. I'm trying to think of the closest thing I can come to it that comes to it nowadays are the popcorn containers you might see in the movie theater. In the old shops and groceries, you'd go up there and you'd ask for potato chips, and the clerk would scoop out a bunch of potato chips and put them into a paper bag. Well, you know, if you've ever had a bag of potato chips that's been accidentally left open for a day or two, especially in the hot, warm, muggy days of summer, you know that they can be pretty stale. And so it wasn't until the 1920s that people came up with ways of packaging chips and sealing the package so that they would remain fresh for more than, you know, a few days or a week.
I was trying to remember the name of the woman who actually came up with using wax paper of some sort.
Right. That's Laura Scudder.
Oh.
And Larry, if you lived in California, you would remember the name of Laura Scudder because she's kind of a household name there, I think, still to this day. Laura Scudder was a businesswoman and a nurse, and she, in the 1920s, got the bright idea to seal chips in wax paper bags and instructed her employees to go home at night and iron in little wax strips in the bags, and then the next day during the day when they would package the bags, they just run a hot iron over it, and boom, you've got a sealed bag all of a sudden. And so that was the first kind of primitive prototype of a sealed wax bag.
Dirk Berhan's our guest today, author of the book Crunch, A History of the Great American Potato Chip, published by Terrace Books of the University of Wisconsin Press. Pleased to have him with us today. If you'd like to join in with a question or comment, give us a call at 1-800-642-1234 or email us at talk@wpr.org. And some emails and some questions in. A caller wondered why they stopped making How chips in Milwaukee, H-O-W-E, those chips.
Oh, boy. Could that be Mrs. Howe?
Probably Mrs. Howe.
You know, I don't know that particular brand. I think I've heard of it. At one time, toward the end of the Second World War, there were well over 400 potato chip companies in the United States. And what we've seen and what the book goes into in a fair amount of detail is how these small mom-and-pop chip companies basically got eaten up in corporate consolidation. And, you know, kind of talk about the loss of regional food diversity, regional sorts of taste preferences, which you think a potato chip is just a potato chip, but they really vary quite a bit regionally. So Howe's or Mrs. Howe's, whatever the name was, is, again, I don't know about that particular company, but I'm assuming it's one of many of these mom-and-pop chip companies that just went by the wayside.
Yeah. The how the chips are made has changed a bit over the years. I think originally they were fried in lard, if I'm not mistaken.
Right. Lard or bacon fat was originally the medium of choice. And then they moved to healthier vegetable oils in the early part of the century. There's different types of cookers. The interesting thing now is that the most popular chips, the kind of the front line of the potato chip, is what we call the kettle chip.
Yeah.
Which is actually the original way the potato chips were made. They were originally cooked in cast iron kettles, and now, of course, they're modern stainless steel rectangular kettles. But they make for a thicker, harder, crunchier type of chip, and that's what's really in vogue now.
Janet in Denmark emailed us and said she likes the chips that have the curls in them. So when she opens up a bag, she searches out the chips that have curls in them.
The ones that kind of fold back on top of themselves?
Yeah,
I know. It's so interesting the types of chips one can get out of a bag, and I like those too, and they're crunchier. They have a little more of that tactile, a little more texture, a little more of that tactile feel about them. And what she's talking about.
Dirk Berhan, our guest here. I'm Larry Mueller. Jim Packard, our producer here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Dirk Berhans, our guest today. Dirk Berhans, let me get that correct.
That's it.
Dirk Berhans of Columbia, Missouri. I've got his book right in front of me, so I should have been able to pronounce his name correctly. It's titled Crunch, A History of the Great American Potato Chip, published by the University of Wisconsin Press. Lots of callers online to visit with you, Dirk. So let's go to the phones. And Mark in New Ulm, Minnesota, we go to you first. Hi, Mark.
Hi, actually I'm on 94 by Madison and traveling, and WPR, I can always get somewhere in the States, so I'm enjoying the topic, and I found Janet's comment very interesting, because in a bag of potato chips, I always look for the ones that got a little bit overcooked, and I've often thought that why don't they just make some overcooked ones for us cultists that want that one? But I lived in New Hampshire New England for 17 years. 13 of them were in New Hampshire. And I saw a couple of brands out there. One was Weiss potato chips, and another one was State Line, and both had maintained their independence. I don't think they were aligned with any bigger name who had left their name because of the, you know, kind of like Miller bought Leinenkugel beer but left the Leinenkugel name. I think they were still independent family held. I was just wondering if you had any experience with them.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Well, Wise, you did say Wise, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Wise is still independent. It's a very large northeastern chip company. They were owned by Borden for some time, but now they're independent again. And State Line, I'm not so sure about. Did you see State Line recently?
Oh, we lost Mark there.
Anyway, State Line, I'm not so sure about. I know of State Line, but what Mark was saying about the brown chips, a lot of people like those. A lot of people call them burnt chips. They're not actually burnt. They're actually from potatoes that have high sugar content. There's something about the reaction when they're boiled in oil with high sugar potatoes. They turn brown. And there are, like Mark, there are many customers who really like those brown chips. And some chip companies will pull them off the line because people hand-inspect the chips. They'll hand-pull them off the line and put them in clear bags so that the customers can see they're brown, and they'll sell them in their outlet stores. So there are ways of getting hold of them.
Okay. Phil in Hebron, Illinois, your turn. Hi, Phil.
You guys are making me hungry today with your topic. I was in Lancaster, Pennsylvania one time, and I saw little kids walking home, Amish kids, with chips. And I bought them when I was there, and they were called Utz chips, U-T-Z. And they come in a steel container at a lot of the stores. That is the best potato chip I've ever eaten.
Now you're talking. You and I are on the same wavelength. I think Utz makes one of the best chips you can find anywhere. It's cooked in cottonseed oil. It's terrific. And where you were, Lancaster County, Pennsylvania, is truly the heart of the potato chip world. There's, I don't have the numbers in front of me. There's 8, 10, or 12 independent family-owned chip companies that still to this day make their home in Lancaster County, Pennsylvania.
Well, they sell them at the Central Market there, and I'll tell you that people get a cup of coffee and go buy the chips, and they call that breakfast. And I think that might be health food.
Sounds good to me.
Thanks, Phil. Thanks for calling. Appreciate your call. And aren't there a lot of Amish? Am I mistaken? Aren't there a lot of Amish involved in at least one company in the making of potato chips, or were involved?
Well, yeah. Many of the families in Lancaster and York County, Pennsylvania, are originally Amish and Mennonite families.
Yeah.
And, you know, they've maybe are less strict about their customs than they used to be. Maybe they've changed their sex. That's S-E-C-T-S. Yeah. But there is an Amish tradition, and in chips, and there does seem to be some product loyalty among the Mennonite and Amish peoples in those counties that could account for the diversity of chips we see there.
All right. Well, let's go to Michael in Milwaukee next, see what's on Michael's mind. Hi.
Yes, hi. How are you?
Great. Thank you for calling.
Good. I enjoy your show, as always. I seem to recall a company called Geyser, and the slogan was, Be Wiser by Geyser, in Milwaukee. I'm in Milwaukee, so are you familiar with that one?
Yes, I have heard of geysers, and like you say, they were based out of Milwaukee. And if I'm not mistaken, Geyser was one company that was. I need to check this, but Geyser was one company that was bought up by Borden when Borden tried to go national in the 1980s and 1990s.
Oh, okay. And I got more questions for you here, if I could.
Sure.
Where did they come with the slogan, or who came up with the slogan? I'll bet you can't eat just one.
Uh-huh. You've got quite a little story on that in your book.
Yeah. That's from Lay's potato chips. And if you remember Bert Lahr, who played the Cowardly Lion in The Wizard of Oz, that was the campaign that Lay's used with Bert Lahr, Bet You Can't Just Eat One. And it was a great ad campaign that people might remember from the 60s. I know I remember it.
Okay, and I got one more for you real quick. What is the history of Pringles? And I know they try to keep their chips very integrated, you know, in the vertical configuration.
Mm-hmm.
What is the, you know, were they successful, or how did they interface with the whole deal?
Oh, boy.
Well, that's a great story, too.
Yeah, that's a whole story in itself. Pringles, there were a couple companies in the late 60s, early 70s that tried to make a dehydrated, reconstituted potato chip, and Pringles was the one that was most successful. And they had this idea of using this tennis ball type tubular can, and it really caught on with the public. And I guarantee you, nobody in America who had a TV in the 1970s, early 1970s, did not know about Pringles. And the traditional potato chip makers just went up in arms with this. Their attitude was, you know, we've through our own sweat and blood for the past 100, 150 years, we've been making potato chips, and these guys come along out of nowhere and are making this product that's a dehydrated, reconstituted product that doesn't,
It's not a potato chip, they tried to say.
Yeah, it includes things like rice flour and wheat flour, and it's not even a real potato chip, and they're using the name potato chip on the package. So there were actually several court battles over it between the traditional potato chippers and the Pringles company. And, you know, in the end, it all kind of worked out. The potato chippers had to agree that Pringles, you know, created more interest in potato chips and really helped everybody in terms of the business.
Yeah, because of their marketing. And Pringles, what, it's 7% of the market, is it, something like that now?
It's, you know, I couldn't tell you what it is right now, but they do have a pretty high market share.
Yeah.
Still a popular product.
Thanks, Michael, for calling. Appreciate it. Maggie and Madison, we're on to you now. Hi, Maggie.
Hi. First of all, I'm originally from Milwaukee. I remember Red Dot.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember Mrs. Howes. He was right about that.
Mm-hmm.
And Jay's, which had the slogan, can't stop eating them.
Right.
And they're still around. And Old Dutch is still around.
Uh-huh.
And what's gone, though, is what I thought was absolutely by far the best potato chip ever, Purity. It was a company in Milwaukee that made popcorn and potato chips, and they sold them in big canisters. And I'll bet it was because they were cooked in lard. They had a really addictive light quality that no chip I've had since can come close to. And I beg to differ with the author about these vegetable oils being healthy. I've been reading up on this for years, and what they've been discovering is that naturally saturated fats, like clean, not overprocessed lard, and duck fat, and chicken fat, and things like that, are actually better for you than the vegetable oils.
Well, what do you think, Dirk?
Well, that could be. I'm not aware of the latest research on that. I do agree that lard chips are really terrific. They do make a lighter, wider chip. And there are a few companies left in Pennsylvania that that cook in lard. One is called Goods. It's actually two companies that merged into one. And man, I'll tell you what, you can you can't beat those lard chips. But I've never heard of a company called Purity that she mentions. But the other one that she mentions, Jay's, is still exists, although they were recently bought out by another large company. They still exist. They operate out of Chicago.
Jay's, it was an interesting story on Jay's because they were they were originally called Japs.
Right. And then Pearl Harbor.
And then Pearl Harbor came and they changed the name to Jay's.
That's right. It was originally owned by a company called Japs, spelled J-A-P-P, and they just decided, well, we better change the name.
And it was originally called that way because the owner's name was Jap.
Right.
Yeah. Thanks, Maggie, for calling. Appreciate it. James and Delavan, we're on to you now. Hi, James.
Good morning. I'll try to be real quick and brief about this. When I first heard the topic, I thought, oh, do we really need a book about potato chips? Then I got into it. Of course, I'm a beer aficionado, and I've studied a lot of beer history, and then I can see the relationship by looking back at what's happened before. Real quickly, a brand that I like really well and is a little bit hard to find is the Mr. Salty's from Rockford, Illinois. And it seems like it's a small operation because I don't see it around very much, but it's a pretty good chip, and I don't know whether the author has heard of that one or not. The other thing is I remember, and this gives away my age, over 55 years ago when I was a kid in school, we went to the Red Dot factory in Madison and went through there and saw how they made and packaged chips. And one of the things I had a question about there was I recall they told how much of the potato was actually able to go into the chip and how much was waste. And I don't recall exactly what the percentage is, and perhaps the guest might be able to enlighten me on that. But I know that some of these chips that are almost handmade, you might say, are pretty pricey. I'll hear your comments off the line.
Thanks, James.
Okay, yeah. About 30%. If you have about 30% of the weight of the potato remaining after you've thrown it into the into the boiling oil, you're doing pretty good. They consider that a pretty good ratio. That's what those chipping potatoes are bred for, is to get that high 30% range of potato matter left over, if you want to call it potato matter. And the brand he mentioned, I think he said Mr. Salty's?
Yeah.
I'm not familiar with that. I haven't heard of that. I'd be curious to know more about it.
Rockford, Illinois, he said.
Rockford, okay. I'm writing it down.
And the peel, just thinking about what's left, the peel, what happens to the peels in most cases?
Oh, they're peeled in a, they're disposed of, they're... The peeler is a cylindrical drum, and it has basically a sand. Well, it has a textured sandpaper-like steel material on the bottom of the drum, and it's just basically scraped right off. They then can take that leftover potato waste, and in some cases, there's a company called Shears in Ohio that takes the leftover starch and the leftover potato materials, and they pack them in the cakes, and the farmers come up and they take them away and feed them to their cattle. So there's lots of ways that they have of disposing of the matter that, you know, can be pretty environmentally advantageous.
Yeah, actually, the cattle, I recall from your book, they were saying that the cattle really seem to like those.
Yeah.
to like those. Well, we've got another email in from, let's see, Naomi. Oh, she mentions that some years ago we had a recipe for making potato chips in the microwave on my radio program, and that was Donovan Fondre, the microwave master, was on one time talking about making potato chips, and he brought some potato chips he made in the microwave and we tried them out, and they tasted pretty good. Are there other ways? I know in your book you talk about the fact that there, you know, potato chip makers always were concerned and had been concerned about the about the nutritional value and all of the worries relating to the fats and oils and so forth. But are there other ways that our potato chips are being made that are popular?
Well, yeah, there are other ways. Lay's went to a lot of trouble to come up with a baked potato chip that would reduce the oil content. And it took them several years and quite a bit of work. And they finally came up with it, and today you see baked Lay's on the shelves,
they're
very popular. And then there's the whole Alestra thing.
Yes.
Alestra, which is actually was created by Procter & Gamble, and it's actually not truly an oil, but it acts like an oil. And if you look at the fat content in an Alestra-cooked chip, it's actually zero, because technically it's not a fat. There was quite a bit of publicity at the time it came out. I'm thinking it was 1996, 97 about people getting diarrhea from Alestra chips, but you don't really hear that anymore.
Yeah. Peter in Stoughton has a question or comment. Hi, Peter.
Good morning.
Morning.
I'm 50 years of age, but I'm suddenly feeling quite ancient here. I grew up in Western New York, in Corning, New York, and I recall at the time, getting Charlie's chips in large steel cans delivered to you by truck.
Yes, many people have talked to me since the book came out about recalling Charles chips being delivered to their house by truck. I personally didn't grow up with those, but it seems that many people all over the country got Charles chips in a tin, and you can find Charles chips tins on the internet, on eBay, and actually, you know, the last time I was in a Cracker Barrel, you could find Charles chips at Cracker Barrel also.
They're still out there and still made.
So yeah, I don't know if it's the original company or if a new company has bought the name. I tried to contact them, and wasn't able to get in touch with anybody there. But you can still get Charles chips.
Well, chips in general were different enough at the time that, for instance, when my mom would make hamburgers for dinner, she would also take some chips and heat them up in the oven and serve them on the side, kind of like we would do with tater tots.
Uh-huh.
But anyway, thank you for the conversation.
All right. Thanks very much for calling. Appreciate it. Paul in Duluth, Minnesota is up next here, so let's go to Paul. Hi, Paul.
Hi. At first, I didn't think I was going to be interested in this topic, but I'm fascinated now. when I was growing up, this was before, I guess, the merger or the creation of Frito-Lay. Lay's potato chips, I grew up in Detroit, and you could buy their potato chips in a can, too. And now those cans are collector's items.
Oh, yeah.
They were like a pale orange can with a silhouette of a woman on it, and it said, I forget what the slogan was now.
New Era?
The New Era. There you go. I guess the modern-day equivalent to that is around the holidays, you can buy flavored popcorn in cans. So I don't know if anybody is still doing that. But my other point was, when did the Ripple chip come about? I'll take your answer off the air.
All right.
Okay, thanks for calling, Paul. The Ripple chip or Wavy chip or Ruffle chips, they really gained popularity in the 50s when chip dip became popular. So you think about it, you're taking a flat cut chip, a regular old potato chip, and you stick it into this a bowl of dip that's made with a, you know, heavy sour cream or whatever. What does it do? It breaks off.
Yep.
But you take a Ripple chip, and those ripples are going perpendicular, hopefully, to the way you're approaching the cream, and it has a lot more structural strength. So those were really kind of coincided with the occurrence of chip dip. And they also have, when you bite into them, they have more texture. In Ohio, in certain parts of Ohio, those chips, those rippled chips, are called Marcelled chips, and you will only find them called that way in certain parts of Ohio by certain companies. And that's another one of these totally regional aspects of potato chips that I just found so interesting, and what drew me to the subject is there are certain parts of the country that just have unique aspects about potato chips, and the customers still to this day remain very loyal to those companies.
I have some friends who are originally from Southern Illinois, and when they would, and living here in Wisconsin, and when any of them would go back home to visit, they would always bring back several bags, and I can't remember the name of the chip anymore, but it was a local chip, and they loved that chip, and so they'd always bring it back when they came back to Wisconsin. And I guess there's a lot I don't know if it's local pride or just the
loyalty.
Loyalty, or
right. Yeah, there really is. There are a lot of companies, and some of these are very small chip companies we're talking, that only have distribution of four or five counties that still exist today. And they'll tell you that the only reason they have an internet presence is because people overseas or people who have moved to California want to get their chips, and they don't know how to do it. So that's why they have a website.
It's amazing how loyal they can be to their particular chips. Charlotte in McConnell, Illinois, has a question or comment.
Comment about the best chip in the world. You can forget all the other names you've heard today. It's Mrs. Mike's. They're made in Freeport, Illinois.
All right.
And I know it has to be over 50 years old because I'd buy them when I was in grade school even.
Huh.
So, and you can go to the plant with your own container and buy by the bulk also. But they do put them up in bags, and they're in all the local grocery stores. But it's Mrs. Mike's, always fresh, and in their slogan is fresh as a daisy. And they are just delicious. And like you said, when people move away, they will order them, or when they come to visit relatives, they'll take a bunch home with them.
Uh-huh.
And they are really, really good.
And that's Freeport, Illinois, they're
mm-hmm.
made.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I have heard of Mrs. Mike's, but I've never tried them. So thanks for thanks, Charlotte, for cluing me into that one. I'll have to check it out.
Well, thank you very much, Charlotte, for calling. Appreciate your call very much. And Dirk, it's been a pleasure talking with you. I really enjoyed reading your book. It was, on the flight down to Florida, and I read a lot of it and then finished it off while I was in Florida, and really enjoyed the learning about the history of the potato chip. It was a fascinating story. Thank you so much.
Okay. Thank you, Larry. You're very welcome. It was a pleasure.
Dirk Berhans of Columbia, Missouri, is author of Crunch, A History of the Great American Potato Chip, and it's published by our own University of Wisconsin Press, by Terrace Books, which is an imprimatur of the University of Wisconsin Press. So I was really pleased to have him with us today. And also pleased to be able to talk with our next guest, who has a new book out. He's the editor, co-editor of a book called The Vanishing Present, Wisconsin's Changing Lands, Waters, and Wildlife. Don Waller, our guest coming up next here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.